Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host this hour, Paul Wearson, here with Saquon Gatlin. Thanks for joining us today. And before we go any further, I want to wish a happy birthday to Carrie Zimmerman, one of our KHOI family. Happy birthday. Well, we've got some great interviews in store for you today, but first let's hear from Dennis Hart with local news from our seven-county listening area. Dennis.
Paul, thank you very much, and hello, everyone. Let's start this week's journey through the news with a look at the Nevada Journal, which reports that a Nevada man who had pleaded guilty to smothering his infant daughter with a pillow was sentenced to 50 years in prison on Monday. Calvin Curtis White, who is 30 years old, will have to serve a minimum of 15 years before he becomes eligible for parole. White was arrested in February after he had been injured when he threw himself in front of a train in Nevada. In court on Monday, his wife Melissa called him a monster, said she would divorce him while he's in prison, and vowed to raise their son to be nothing like his father. The Journal also has word about Nevada residents who will have to get ready for a bit of inconvenience next Wednesday, when 20,000 riders in the Register's annual Great Bike Ride across Iowa leave Ames and roll through Nevada. Those bikers are going to be using Lincoln Highway, and the city of Nevada is going to restrict vehicle traffic on that highway from 6 a.m. until noon. In particular, access to the highway from 600th Avenue to 19th Street will be closed to vehicles. In addition, 6th Street will be closed from N Avenue to J Avenue. The Journal also reports on the Story County Youth Fair in Nevada, which gets into full swing this Friday and runs through next Wednesday. There's a feature story about a 21-foot ice cream cone, at least a 21-foot-tall ice cream stand that is shaped like a cone that will be one of the featured attractions. You can't miss it. In the Boone News Republican, two stories this week about Ledges State Park, one of them involving RAGBRAI, yes, the Register's annual Great Bike Ride across Iowa that we just talked about. Unfortunately, because of flooding, the 20,000 riders will not roll through Ledges next Tuesday as they were originally supposed to. Instead, they're going to be rerouted around the park as they head toward an overnight stop right here in Ames. The News Republican's other story about Ledges reported that registration was still open for the University of Iowa's wildlife camp, which lets participants receive conservation information and adventure recreation. The camp will run from July 23rd through the 27th, and registration closes today, Wednesday, so get on it. There was more in the News Republican, including a story about Iowa Agriculture Secretary Mike Naig's visit to an Iowa State University research farm in Boone County last week, where he showed up for a monarch butterfly conservation field day. While he was there, he asked farmers for patience despite a big downturn in commodity prices triggered by President Trump's $50 billion tariffs against Chinese goods. China has implemented the same amount of tariffs against such American goods as corn, pork, and soybeans, all of which are important to Iowa. Naig said many farmers have already locked in prices for their harvest this year, but they could feel lots of pain if the low prices continue next year. Also in the News Republican, word that the National Federation of State High School Associations recently gave one of its highest awards to a Central Iowa man. Ellen Greiner, who works in Boone as the executive director of the Iowa High School Music Association, was the award recipient. And there is word that the Iowa Business Council kicked off a series of forums with state and local political leaders in Boone yesterday. That first forum featured various CEOs from companies based in Iowa as well as other business representatives. And one more note from the News Republican, a rundown on this year's Boone County Fair, which starts tomorrow and goes through Sunday. There will be a lot to see there, including a carnival, parade, pig races, a demolition derby, and much more. All this at the Boone County Fairgrounds. See you at the pig races. In the Story City Herald, word that a bolt of lightning struck two men outside a Colo golf course last Friday afternoon, sending both men to the hospital. The men, one of them in his 20s and the other in his 40s, were hit by lightning in the Twin Anchors golf course parking lot. Both had been standing outside a vehicle. Authorities said one bolt of lightning hit both of them. There was no immediate update on their conditions. Also in the Herald, word that those who went to the Bertha Bartlett Public Library in Story City last Saturday got a first-hand look at some of the art and costumes from the Metropolitan Museum of Fine Art in New York City. That's because Iowa native Jason Dobney, who is now a Met Museum administrator, was back here in Iowa visiting friends and family, and he stopped off at the Story City Library to make a presentation and share his experiences. In the Tri-County Times, word that Story County officials are still collecting damage reports after heavy rains drenched the county last month. You remember that. Roads were damaged, basements were flooded, and drainage systems were absolutely overwhelmed. Among the areas hardest hit, Kelly, where rain flooded yards, streets, and basements, and Maxwell, where some people ended up with as much as 5 feet of water in their basements. And there you have it, your weekly summary of news from the pages of the Nevada Journal, the Boone News Republican, the Story City Herald, and the Tri-County Times. Of course, they will all have more news when their print editions come out later this week. As always, I'm Dennis Hart, and as always, I'll be back right here live on Friday with the week's news summary from the pages of the Ames Tribune, Paul.
Well, Dennis, I wouldn't miss that any more than I'd miss the pig races in Boone.
You know, you and I could actually be in those races and maybe beat one of those porkers. I don't know
that. We have the facial qualifications to be in the race.
We're not in as good a shape, though.
Oh, Dennis Hart, the old radio guy. We love you, guy.
Wait a minute. I haven't had another birthday. I'm not that much older.
Okay, and thank you, Dennis. This is Local Talk on KHOI Radio. Now, Citizens for Community Improvement, or CCI, is a statewide activist establishment whose mission is organizing collective grassroots activism in Iowa. Their annual statewide convention is one way to read the temperature of many current social, environmental, and political issues. It's coming up this Saturday, July 21st in Des Moines. Evan Berger is a senior organizer for CCI. Welcome back, Evan, to Local Talk.
Thank you, Paul. Great to be here.
It's good to see you again. Much younger man than I and much more energetic. Tell us now, this is coming up this Saturday, July 21st, and it's going to be where?
Yeah, it's down at the Iowa Events Center in the Community Choice Credit Union Convention Center, or also
Veterans
known as
Auditorium.
Exactly,
for Veterans the old guys.
Veterans Auditorium side. Get started about 9 a.m., runs until about 4 p.m. On Saturday.
Tell us a little bit about this year's convention. You're the main organizer and someone, the go-to guy, so you've got keynote speakers, and tell us what's going to happen.
Yeah, definitely. So it's very much a team effort, you know, the whole CCI staff throws in, but this is our best event of the year. We do this every year, our annual statewide convention, and it's one of my favorite events of the year. Hundreds of Iowans coming in together from across the state to kind of talk about these issues, plan for the year ahead. So this year especially is pretty exciting. The theme this year is a future worth fighting for, and I think, you know, in today's political climate, what we would say is sometimes the future looks pretty dark, and we want to change that. And one way to change that is to get together and kind of think about what could the future look like. What would a future worth fighting for look like? And then talk about how we get there. So to that end, we have an amazing keynote speaker lined up, Senator Nina Turner, the president of the National Our Revolution Group, which is one of our close partners, came out of the Bernie Sanders movement. Is our keynote speaker in the afternoon. Some other big name speakers we have, Kathy Glosson, former gubernatorial candidate, is talking about what's next for coming out of her campaign. We have a number of great movement thinkers and doers coming in for workshops to kind of really dig in on the nitty gritty of what is it that we're fighting for and how do we get there.
So you have several workshops, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
And these workshops would tell people, hey, here's what we've agreed upon as things we want to advocate for and be involved with, and here's how we do that in your area. You can take this home and say, well, how do we become active and do what we're going to do locally, and how do we get organized? Who do we call? And that means they don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, a lot of these people are coming in from across the country. So, for instance, we have some great organizers from Missouri Rural Crisis Center coming up to talk about the factory farm issue. And that's always an interesting one because in Missouri, they've been able to fight back against factory farms and fight for clean water in a way that we haven't been able to quite as much here in Iowa. They've been able to maintain local control over factory farm siting, for anyone who's familiar with that issue. And so they're going to share how they were able to do that and how they were able to take on corporate power in that way. Another workshop that has a speaker coming in from outside of Iowa is one on art and culture in organizing. How do we use art and kind of cultural side of things to move forward our issues? And that's being led by Fabiana Rodriguez, who is very much active in the immigrant rights movement. And, you know, she's the artist who invented that kind of, like, butterfly wings imagery that you see at immigrant rights rallies over the last year. So that's another interesting one where it's kind of expanding our ideas of what's possible and how we think about the work that we do. And you know, again, a great movement thinker and doer from across the country coming in.
You know, these are people who've been there, done that, fought the war, and can tell you how to do it without making a lot of mistakes on the way to your goal.
Right? We hope so.
Well, the best thing about any convention, and I've been to many for a lot of organizations, is the best experience probably is meeting people like yourself who might share goals and might share ideas and might share opinions and are motivated to act. But they might feel alone where they are, and they might feel like they're the only one in their county or they're in a minority of people who care about an issue. And I would assume that having all these people together in one place reminds them that they're not alone.
Yes.
And that there are people who function very well doing what they are doing and hope to do, and then they've got that experience. They have that history, and they're sharing that with the people there who are wondering, how do I do it? I know what I want to do. I know what my outcome needs to be. But how do I do that? Well, if someone comes and said, here's how I did it in my area. Well, you see, then you've got flesh and blood.
Yes, yes.
Who said, hey, I've done this. This is how you do it. Now, what kind of numbers do you expect?
Yeah, so like I said, every year hundreds of other Iowans come in. You know, last year we had Senator Bernie Sanders as our keynote speaker, so that was our biggest one yet. Had about 900 people for that one. It's not going to be quite as big this year, but it's going to be, you know, 300-400 folks in the room on Saturday.
That's very good, though, when you consider that people are traveling quite a distance.
Yes.
And that's also a measure of how motivated and concerned they are. And everyone feels like, you know, in this political climate, as you mentioned, you might feel like you're tilting at windmills sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to know that you're not alone. And so is there a keynote speaker that kicks things off, or how do you begin the conference?
We put a lot of thought into this. How do we start the day? And what we settled on was our board president, the president of our board of directors, Sheree Mortiz, who is very fiery, kind of grassroots. She's from the east side of Des Moines, got a lot of passion. She's going to kick the morning off with a lot of energy. And then we have a panel discussion from some of these big name speakers in the morning, and then Senator Nina Turner speaking in the afternoon. So it's going to be high energy throughout the day. That's one thing, you know. If you've been to a CCI event before, you know, there's never a dull moment. You know, there's going to be cheering, high energy stuff throughout the day.
And I assume there are people of all ages and all blocks of life and backgrounds. So you're going to meet a lot of people from various areas, both urban and rural.
Yes.
And so these are people who might have common goals, but they might have a certain issue in their area that may not be an issue for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can share not only that issue if you have it in common, but the mechanics of how to get that done or accomplished in your county, wherever you might be. Is that right?
That's right. And, you know, just to kind of take a step back, kind of our overall take is that, you know, all these different issues that we work on, the clean water issue, you know, fighting against climate change, racial justice, health care for all, you know, our analysis is that, you know, what's behind all these is corporate power. That's what's causing all these problems. And if we want to get serious and win this future that's worth fighting for, we got to figure out the best ways to take on corporate power. And the best way to do that is to kind of come in and learn from each other, because there are some tactics that can be used across these different struggles, you know, because we do have this common enemy. So that's one thing that I'm always excited for with this convention is that, you know, even if someone's invested in the clean water work and another person's invested in the racial justice work, we can kind of cross-pollinate and talk about how this is all related and kind of share some tactics.
So when you get through with a meeting like this, everybody feels good and rejuvenated and heads out on their trail to accomplish whatever their dreams are.
That's the goal, and if I could quickly mention, you know, if anyone listening to this program who likes what you're hearing here, it sounds like an event you're interested in, you can give us a call at the office at 515-255-0800 to register for the convention, and not to sound too much like a salesman, but if you mention the interview, we'll give you a break on the price too. So if you like this, you know, give us a ring, 515-255-0800, and we can get you registered.
Well, this is KHOI, 89.1 FM, Story City and surrounding area, and Ames, and we're talking with a young man with Citizens for Community Improvement. And Evan is here as our guest. And Evan, is there a website that you want to mention that
yes.
people can go to also?
Yeah. So if you want to do it online, you can go to cciaction.org/July21 to register and find out more information about the event as well.
And that is in Des Moines, in what used to be Veterans Auditorium. And parking is not an issue. People can find parking and all that sort of thing. Are there any things that they should know about the facility going in that you need to warn them about, or any traffic problems or parking problems?
Yeah, so the traffic should be fine. Again, this is on kind of the north side of the event center, so parking is in the north lots. And there's a cost for parking, unfortunately. I think it's like $8 or something. So logistically, that's what you need to know. One other thing is, if you do come to the event, where everyone gets a T-shirt to take home with them. I'm wearing last year's T-shirt here.
Yeah, it says Revolution Iowa.
Right, right.
The Action Fund.
Yes.
And it's a very attractive T-shirt.
Thank you.
And red in color, too.
Right, right. Yeah. I think this year is kind of a gold color. So
every year there's a different color T-shirt, and you can collect them.
Yes, and people do. That's
so you're going to have one for red for last year, gold for this year, and you haven't picked a color for next year.
Not yet, no.
Are you going to be having the convention next year in the same location?
We'll see. You know, one thing we do at CCI is the Monday after the convention, so next Monday we'll start planning the 2019 convention. So we try and get a head start. You know, we really like this space, and one thing we know for sure is we're definitely going to have a convention. It'll be a summer event again, and we just try and make every year a little bit better than the year before.
Des Moines is attractive because it is central.
Yes,
The interstates converge there, and it's just an opportunity for people if they're from Northeast Iowa. Or Southeast Iowa or Southwest Iowa, you know, it makes more sense to do it there than Cedar Rapids or Mason City or something that's not as centrally located, unless you have people in your organization who demand to move the convention to another location. So I assume you'll be in Des Moines again next year.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. And, you know, like you said, you know, this is a statewide event. It's kind of centrally located. But we get out and we do, you know, events all around the state throughout the year. But for this one, we stick with.
Well, the main thing is it's going to come up this Saturday, and now, Evan, it's your opportunity to give them the whole package, time, where, everything. Remind them.
All right, very good. Saturday, July 21st, this is the CCI Action Annual Convention. The theme this year is A Future Worth Fighting For. Registration opens at 8 a.m., and the event itself starts at 9 a.m. We'll wrap up around 4 p.m., and we'll be on the north side of the Iowa Event Center in what used to be called Veterans Memorial Auditorium.
This is great. Evan Berger with Citizens for Community Improvement, or CCI. Big event coming up, and Evan will be there. Evan has been key in organizing it, and if this is something you want to be involved with, just be sure and contact Evan. He's getting the website, too, Evan.
Yes.
Repeat that.
cciaction.org/July21.
And we're moving from Evan Berger and CCI to Nirvana, which is paradise, I think. Nirvana and their song, Come As You Are.
You to be, there's a friend, there's a friend.
Well, thank you. I hope that applause was for us, Quan. That was Nirvana, Come As You Are. This is KHOI 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames and surrounding area. And you know, with the recent passing of our former Iowa Governor Robert Ray, one institution he publicly supported has been brought to the attention of many, and the Iowa International Center embodies the humanitarian values the former governor was known for. Now, Patricia Grote is the executive director for the Iowa International Center, and she's honoring us by coming to KHOI all the way from Des Moines, where the center is located. Thank you for joining us today, Patricia.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, give us a sketch of the mission of the International Center. What do you do there?
Our vision is really to create and inspire a global community, and we do that by creating enriching opportunities and cultural understanding among people, mostly through languages. So we do a lot of language services and programs. We have cultural exchanges, professional exchanges across the world, and we also have a number of opportunities where people can sit across the table and talk to people of other cultures. It's pretty exciting.
Well, what's the history of this organization? How did it begin?
The Iowa International Center started in 1938.
1938.
Some of our first people that we served were immigrants from Germany and Poland who were coming to the United States as a result of World War II.
So it dates that far back and has been going constantly since then.
It has indeed, yes.
Were there valleys and highs and lows?
Sure. There's in any organization, especially a nonprofit one, who was started by volunteers and run by volunteers for a number of years.
But somehow there's been a red thread that runs through all these years that kept it together. I bet there were probably certain leadership people who did their thing and then passed it on to someone else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We had a recent executive director, Judith Conlon, who left just a year and a half ago, who really set a lot of stage for us and for the programs that we do now.
Well, what goes on there every day? A typical day?
There is no typical day at the Iowa International Center. I will tell you about some of our typical programs. One of the largest is our interpretation and translation service. So we help people understand one another, whether it's a doctor's appointment, a kid's school counseling session, or maybe it's their financial institution. We provide interpreters and sometimes translate documents as well.
Now, how does that happen? First of all, where is the office or central location physically?
We are located on the more north side of Des Moines, so we're up by Merle Hay Mall.
And so is that staffed at certain hours of the day?
Yes, we're staffed pretty much 8 to 5 every day.
And so people know that if they have an issue, for instance, if they're barely bilingual and they need to deal with a doctor's appointment for their child, they could call the International Center and get help to communicate with those folks.
Yes, they absolutely could.
Is that typical to get that kind of call?
Well, mostly those kinds of calls come from organizations. So it's kind of a three-way interpretation appointment. So there's the person who benefits from it, that person you were just talking about who's not quite bilingual, who needs help with language. There's also the contractor, the interpreter who knows the language, and then there's the business or the doctor or the school who needs to make sure that the communication is good.
So you help bring that all together.
We bring that all together.
And so what other things go on besides that? Are there informational meetings or walk-in clients?
We have some of all of those. Mm-hmm. We absolutely do. We also have a hotline that we talk to, that we promote with first responders and crisis personnel. So there's domestic abuse. There's people who get in trouble with the law. There are mental health issues. There are emergencies like people lost in the woods by people who can't speak English as well. So those first responder and crisis personnel can use our hotline to connect with an interpreter in one of 220 languages to help the person.
How many languages?
Well, the yeah.
That's mind-bending.
that hotline, you can get about 220 languages.
That's fantastic.
It is fantastic, yeah.
Well, now, a lot of this, your stuff that goes on is really based on referral from agencies who deal with specific groups.
On that, it is, yes.
Because let's say you have an immigrant family from Croatia or something, and they would relate to some organization they customarily work with. And if they run into a problem, they would make a referral of that individual to you or call you on their behalf.
Yes, that does happen. That's one of the ways that it happens. We also have a website that's called Welcome to Iowa, in which we list a number of resources, and it can be translated using our good friend Google Translate, so someone can look at resources that way, too. We also get calls directly to us, particularly for our English language classes.
So basically, you're talking about folks who are new to Iowa and who might not be bilingual, who are lost in a new culture. And now, self-disclosure, I worked with Governor Ray and his staff because I was a state employee with the Employment Security Commission or Job Service. And so our task was to place these individuals in jobs. And, of course, we had people who had just come to the country, as we all know, who had no real leverage here or acquaintances, because, you know, look at our immigrant groups and the history of them. Usually groups came through Ellis Island and hooked up with a relative they already had in the country, and they were probably in an ethnic community where everyone spoke their language and there was a base for them to work with. Well, these individuals didn't have that. There was no Vietnamese or Hmong or Thai group, and so we had to, most of them worked through sponsors, churches and other organizations. But our assignment was to develop jobs for them. And my staff would call the individual when they had a phone, when they were home. And someone would answer the phone who was not conversant in English. And then it was kind of cute because they'd hand the phone to their child who already knew the language, because they'd picked it up rapidly, and so the child was the liaison so that we could tell that person when their interview was and where the job was and all that sort of thing. And you could, it was just really cute. Mom, Dad. Well, and then they'd go into their language. And so I thought it was interesting. The kids picked up the culture and the language quick.
Kids are sponges. They do pick it up very quickly. We just started a new English language class, and I saw that very thing happen. The kids came in and made sure Mom and Dad were settled, and then they went on their merry way. You know, sometimes if they were tiny enough, they stayed around, but they just wanted to make sure Mom and Dad were taken care of, and then they went on, and then they checked in later.
Yeah, in a way, they were, and a lot of them were young. They were 8 years old,
right?
And they were caregivers in terms of guiding their parents through this new culture. It was heartwarming to watch.
And, it is heartwarming.
And, of course, I went into their homes. I met them, and always the woman would bring in chilled juice, you know. And it might have been marginal housing, but it was spick and span. And it was just a real learning experience. And Governor Ray and his staff were as advertised. They were helpful. They facilitated our work. And without them, of course, none of this would have happened.
Right. And so in that time that you're talking about, there was help for families from 6 months to 3 years.
Your organization was active at that time.
We were active.
Having existed since 1938.
That's right. Yeah. But that support from the state and from the government, not just the state, that's been shortened to 90 days for those refugees who come in.
Is
so,
that right?
Yeah. So in 90 days, refugees are required to find a job. They have to figure out how to live in the United States. They are figuring out transportation. Sometimes they know the language, sometimes they don't. So they have to start learning how to maneuver in a new culture with a new language. It's
how
quite
satisfying
challenging.
To be helpful to them.
It is incredibly humbling and rewarding.
Reward. Yeah.
Absolutely.
A daily reward. Now, you're talking about a requirement. This 90-day requirement is relatively recent. Is that right?
The last few years. I'm not sure I can put a date on it. Yeah, but it is recent.
Well, now, when we talk about the political climate currently and what's happening in terms of immigration and anything that regards people who are newly arrived, have you seen a change in what your responsibilities and issues are, let's say, in the last year?
The issues and responsibilities are pretty much the same. We're here to serve those new Iowans. However, the attention paid to them and the response from communities is a little bit different. There has been a little bit more fear among some of the people we work with. My colleagues talk about that a lot. But that happens in two ways. We see two things happen as a result of that fear. Sometimes people don't come forward for services that they are eligible for and could really benefit them. And the other way it shows up is they are in every English language class and citizenship class they can possibly be in. So it depends on how confident and comfortable and where they are in their life as to what their response is.
Well, I bet some people come in just gripped with fear about the new culture, the new place, and all the things that they read in the paper that's happening to people being deported and this sort of thing. So we live in a climate of fear in terms of anyone who's new to this culture or this country, depending on their status. But, you know, nothing happens in a vacuum. So we hear this news that might be disturbing and worrisome to these people. So your clients might feel more vulnerable now than maybe a year or two ago. And so this is a very high calling, and you must have 100 stories to tell about some of the clients you've served. And I just want you to highlight again, it's the International Center, and it's in Des Moines.
That's right.
Just give me a rundown of the services you offer.
Sure. I'm just going to tick them off for you here.
I want to be inclusive.
Yeah,
you know?
You bet. We talked about our interpretation and translation program. We also have the English language program, and we have classes across the city. We have a couple of hotlines. We're going to be having a housing hotline as well, so landlords and tenants can have a chance to communicate directly. Yeah, we're going to launch that a little bit later this month. We also have an international exchange program that we haven't had a chance to talk about. I just want to mention that. We bring people over from Europe and across the world. We just had a group of agricultural professionals, 22 countries, 22 visitors, 22 countries. That's pretty typical. And we do those exchange. We have those places where people can sit and have dinner and talk about whatever restaurant they're at and the culture associated with it.
So there's all kinds of things, both seemingly inane, but there might be important things to wrapped up in that inanity, because, you know, we navigate so easily through our culture, having been born here, but there are all kinds of things that I remember when the astronaut program was young. There was a picture of John Glenn, and he had his fingers in a circle with his hands extended, and they published this poster all over and put it in American embassies. It was just beautiful. It said, A-OK, with his fingers in a circle. Well, we found out that was an obscene gesture in several countries. And so no one did the research. We forget about some of the cultural things that separate us. But certainly you're involved in uniting people and bringing them into a new culture and the greatest tradition, because this is a melting pot. This is a confluence of immigration over the whole history of the country for a very long time. And we forget that our grandfathers and grandmothers came here for the same reason that someone from Guatemala struggles up through Mexico to here today.
You know, and the way we're all successful, it really comes down to relationships. Whether people are in English language classes or they're having their American dinner on an exchange, it really comes down to relationships. In one of our ELL classes, English language classes a year ago, there was a young woman who had a tutor who was the instructor, and they hit it off. They had a chemistry. And all of a sudden they were talking about personal things, and that's when the magic happens.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and the woman didn't have gloves. She was from a warm climate, so it was cold outside. It was February. And so the instructor brought her an extra pair of mittens she happened to have. And it was graciously accepted. But the next week, the woman brought the instructor a bracelet because they found that they had a common interest in jewelry. Tiny, tiny things, but really meaningful and really create a connection for people.
I'm starting to envy you for your daily experience.
I would love everyone to come work with us.
Well, the main thing is that it exists, and it's there as a resource. It's a way for people to come into our culture, and it's a way to mitigate their fear and concern. And we have to put ourselves in their place. What if we suddenly found ourselves in a foreign culture where they didn't speak our language or share our customs, and then we're trying to build a life there? We're not just visiting. And so basically, That's just a cornerstone of what America is, and you're functioning in making things happen for people who, like all of our families, are new here. My family was once new here. They were Norwegians, and so it was our time to be new, and everyone had their time to be new. How are you funded for this program?
Our funding is all over. We do have some government funding for some of our exchange programs. We also have fees for our interpretation services. And then the rest comes from individuals and corporations and foundations who really believe in what we're doing.
Well, I'm strongly moved by what you've said, and I'm not surprised you drove all the way from Des Moines, because you're a motivated person.
I am motivated. I cannot go to an ELL class and look around and see 20 people who have worked all day and been busy raising their family and earning a living still there wanting to learn English and not be motivated.
Well, Patricia Grote from the International Center in Des Moines, our guest, been very edifying and enlightening today, and thanks for driving all the way from Des Moines and moving me with your stories. Now we're going to have a little musical interlude again. And Patricia, thank you. KHOI, 89.1 FM.
Tiene cuenta, tiempo no tiene cuenta, tiempo no tiene cuenta, presencia, claro como un cristal, puro como el agua, fuerte como el fuego, presencia, medicina, ayúdame a estar presente, medicina, ayúdame a estar presente aquí y ahora en todo lo que hago, aquí y ahora en todo lo que hago. Oh, oh, oh. No ayer, no mañana, estoy aquí. No ayer, no mañana, estoy aquí. No.
That was Presencia by Danette Trubig. This is Local Talk on KHOI 89.1 FM, Story County. I am Saquon Gatlin, hosting this hour together with Paul Wearson. Thank you for listening this morning. About 2 weeks ago, I walked around campus with a simple mission: touch one rough tree and touch one soft tree. While on that mission, there were a few interesting things going on with the insects and arachnids outside. First, the spider was chasing a bunch of ants. It's very strange to me. This was not something I wasn't used to seeing, and when I went to touch the rough tree, there was a line of spiders walking in the same direction. I shared the story with the team at the Local Talk meeting, And we all wanted to know a little bit more about the situation with these little critters. Therefore, I asked someone special in the study of insects to join me for the discussion of biodiversity in Iowa. Donna Lewis is an extension entomologist and professor at Iowa State University. He joins me in the studio this morning, and it is a pleasure to have you on the show, Donald.
Hello, Quan. Glad to be here.
All right. Well, first of all, since we're discussing biodiversity, can you just give a little bit of a definition and basis of what biodiversity is?
Every biologist would have their own view of biodiversity. As an entomologist, mine tends to be how many different kinds of insects do we have, and are those insects increasing or decreasing within a given ecosystem? Of course, many of the insects we're looking at are plant feeders. And so as an entomologist, we also think about what plants are in that ecosystem and do we have the right plants for the insects that we're interested in and back and forth. Other biologists might look more at what's the diversity of birds or what's the diversity of prairie plants. So we all have our own little niche of thinking about biodiversity, which is just how many different things are out there in a given area.
Now, can you describe what the landscape was like previously in Iowa compared to now?
I've only been here 41 years, so I really can't speak to the geological history of the state. But we all know that 10,000 years ago, an ice sheet a mile thick pushed down out of Canada and scraped all the topsoil and everything that was on the state of Iowa, scraped it down into a pile at Des Moines, where the capital sits. That hill where the capital sits is where the glacier stopped. It was the terminal moraine of the glacier. When that glacier receded, prairie plants started to grow, and over 10,000 years of prairie grasses and the insects that feed on those grasses and the mammals that feed on those grasses developed the soils that we have today. So the long view is this 10,000 years of growing grasses with very deep roots that added lots of organic matter to our soil, which gave us what we have today. So that's where biodiversity started, for the central part of Iowa, is it started with these prairie grasses, and we have modified it and changed it from there.
Now, is there an issue that we have here in Iowa with biodiversity? I know that you had mentioned, monocultures, and I wanted you to speak a little bit about that. But do we have an issue with biodiversity here?
One of the things that has happened over the last couple hundred years is we have removed about 98% of the prairie that used to be here. And in its place, we have put in monocultures of corn and soybeans and just a couple of other crops. So to utilize those prairie soils for profit and for the money that we could generate, we have changed from a diverse prairie to a single species. In some fields, corn, that's about 13 million acres out of Iowa's landscape, and about 9 million acres of soybeans. And in those areas, the biodiversity is very low because the goal is to have a monoculture that will produce a lot of crop.
And you don't want anything, you don't want too many insects or anything to hurt your crops, right? So then it's better for them to be just one species specifically there, or how does that work?
Well, the profit margin of agronomic practices is to maximize the production of the species that you can harvest, either corn or soybeans for most of our Iowa farmers. In order to maximize that production, they have to control, at least, or manage to the best ability, the things that would interfere with maximum production. And that would include weeds and insects and diseases. And over the last 50 to 75 years, they've been given very good tools to accomplish that. And so they do eliminate the competition of other plants in order to maximize the production of the crop.
Wow. Wow. It's a little bit hard to hear, it's specifically if biodiversity is an issue. Now, can you tell us what the long-term damage is of that lack of biodiversity?
Again, as an entomologist, I'm thinking about the insects that come and go, the insects that were here originally that have been replaced maybe by crop-specific insects, also insects that arrive here accidentally and become a problem for us. So as we look over the history, the things that ate prairie plants have pretty much diminished and are now confined to those prairie remnants that we have, although some of those can also feed in our gardens and we can help in that way. So as an entomologist, I think about the things that used to eat what was here and now those are down, but there are other things that have replaced them and they are up. But it's always a moving target, what's out there. And because of the introduction of new species, the movement of new species into the area, new different kinds of insects, we see different things all the time.
Now, as you said, there are insects that are not previously from Iowa that are here currently. What causes that insect dispersal other than maybe in the situation with the monocultures? Is there anything specifically that causes that dispersal?
Dispersal pretty much for insects happens in one of two ways. The insects can fly or crawl on their own. And right now people may be seeing strawberry root weevils or earwigs in their house. And that's a dispersal by those insects from their outdoor habitats where they grew and developed, and they wander in by mistake. So wandering, either crawling or flying, is one way that insects disperse in short measure, pretty slowly. They don't get very far. Some insects, though, are aided by wind, and so we can get long-range dispersal of some insects. If they get high enough into the air, they'll move into our yard. And an example of that would be I could do everything perfectly in my backyard and have no mosquitoes, but the wind blows, and now I have mosquitoes. So there's going to be dispersal or movement that way. Finally, the one, though, that we really worry about with the introduction of invasive species is we move them. Gypsy moths lay their eggs on your vehicle when you're in the forest. And when you drive your vehicle, you move the gypsy moth eggs with you.
Oh, wow.
Emerald ash borers live in firewood. And trees that died from emerald ash borer in the east are cut down, made into firewood. You load that firewood into a pickup truck. And now the emerald ash borer is dispersing down the interstate highway at 70 miles an hour. So it's those movements of insects by us that create many of our problems. And when we think about some of our worst problems, they were brought to this country accidentally with shipments of cargo and so forth, and then they were helped around the country by us. But that's not all of them. Some of them just move on their own. One of the myths is that the multicolored Asian lady beetle, that ladybug that's on the side of your house in the fall of the year, and then it's inside the house during the winter months and on into the spring, there's this myth that it was brought to the United States to help the soybean farmers. And that's not true because we had soybean aphid before. We had the multicolored Asian lady beetle before we had the soybean aphid. And nobody brought that one to Iowa. It was accidentally introduced into ports with ships from other parts of the world, and then it crawled and flew on its own. So they do get around. They can take care of themselves, but they can be aided by us.
Now, when we do participate in dispersal, does that create potential for more disease, or how else does that affect our populations?
Well, emerald ash borer would be a good example of that. It had never been found in the United States, but it was discovered in 2002 in the Detroit, Michigan area. And it was an accidental introduction that probably came in wooden shipping crates with materials that had been crated over on the Far East and then moved to Iowa. And that insect was then introduced into the United States. And as we move firewood around the state, we have now introduced the emerald ash borer into almost 40 different states. And in the state of Iowa, we have it in about 60 different counties. And our first county discovery of emerald ash borer, the one that's going to kill most of our ash trees unless they're treated, was in 2010. It had never been found in Iowa until 2010, and now it's found in over half of our counties. So that kind of movement of a devastating insect is going to have a great impact on our landscape, probably also less so on our woodlands. But if you have an ash tree, it's one of those things you worry about because of the specific nature of that insect eating the wood of that tree.
Now, I'm just interrupting here, Donald. You said treatments. How effective are the treatments for emerald ash borer?
Emerald ash borer treatments are effective when done well and when done repeatedly. There is no one and done. You can't treat your ash tree once and protect it forever. And if it's a large tree, specifically a tree greater than 20 inches in diameter, you have to hire a professional, and they will inject a small amount of insecticide into that tree, which will protect it from the beetle feeding on the tree and also the larvae feeding in the tree. But that has to be done every other year.
And every other year, okay.
Right now, the research is looking for longer-lasting controls. But right now, if you have an ash tree you want to protect, and since emerald ash borer has been found in Story City, also in Boone, and now in West Ames, your tree is at risk. If you have an ash tree that you want to protect, it's time to talk to an arborist or a tree care professional about treating your larger trees.
Well, now, one other question. In terms of climate change, is there anything going on in the insect world that's, in your mind, a canary in the coal mine? It's an indicator of climate change.
I'm not a climatologist. I'm not a meteorologist to know all the details of that. But what I find interesting are the changes I have observed in the 40 years that I've been here. For example, we didn't used to have earwigs. And now that's sort of a common household invader, or you find them out in your garden, or you find them under the pots on your patio where you're trying to grow petunias. So that's one that seems to have responded probably to wetter springs. We have more moisture in the springtime, and that's probably helping the earwigs. We didn't used to have carpenter bees in central Iowa, and now we have them. So there are two pests that seem to have moved north over the span of four decades. But at the same time, people are seeing more praying mantids in central Iowa than they used to. It's a southern insect. We used to think of it as a Missouri, southern Indiana, southern Illinois insect. But that large six-inch long Chinese mantid is now commonly spotted in Ames and as far north as Waterloo and Sioux City. And that's one that we didn't used to see. So things seem to have moved north. Can I prove that it's climate change? No, but I can link some insect problems like bagworms on your spruce tree to milder winters.
Yeah, so I think that probably, I heard some, it might have been a climatologist, but he said that many species are moving north. And he's referring to the organism kingdom pretty generally, not just insects, that he was talking about species moving north. What's the deal with these little black gnats we have this year? Tell us. A lot of people would want to know about the black gnats.
Yeah. I missed all that because I was in Africa visiting our daughter during the month of May, and the temperatures in Iowa were hotter than they were in Malawi, Africa, where I spent the month of May. And during that time, you had the emergence of an insect that we always have present, the black flies, also known as buffalo gnats, and they're generally down along the river because the immature stage of that insect lives in running water. I don't recall ever having as many problems with buffalo gnats or black flies as what was reported this past May. It's kind of a temporary thing. It's like a 2 to 3 week emergence period when the adults are out of the water. They have to feed on blood in order to reproduce and go back to the water to lay their eggs. And the numbers were just horrendous here in central Iowa, but sort of centered over in Boone County is the reports that I got. But I'm sorry I missed all that because I was out of the country, but the reports are pretty convincing that it was unprecedented what we had this past year.
Now, Donald, can you tell us what some of the resources are that are available to the public to either understand more about entomology or biodiversity, specifically with insects?
Yeah. We have a great system through the land-grant universities like Iowa State University, like Purdue, like University of Minnesota, University of Nebraska. Those universities have, as part of their mission, outreach. And the outreach or extension that we do extends out into every county. You can contact your local county extension office, and they will put you into touch with specialists at Iowa State University. Iowa State University has a plant and insect diagnostic clinic. If you're not sure what's eating your tree, if your vegetables don't look like they're supposed to, you can send samples to the university plant and insect diagnostic clinic. There is a fee for the diagnosis of problems on those plants. And then finally, Iowa State University is the home of a resource called Bug Guide. And it's one word, Bug Guide, with two G's in the middle, bugguide.net. And It's a great place to see a million different pictures of insects. It's a little overwhelming, but if you kind of know what you want to look for, Bug Guide is a good resource as well.
All right. We have been hearing from Donald Lewis, who is an extension entomologist and professor at Iowa State University. We want to thank you for coming in this morning.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
And this has been Local Talk, and I have been your host, Saquon Gatlin, and we've also had Paul Wearson here hosting with me. We want to thank you for listening this morning.
Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also, remember that you can also hear a recording of this show later today online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Also, remember that KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you and come in and join the Local Talk team. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.